Today, we go on to the third part. And the third part, I think you will find, is very historical. It has lots of history in it. So we start with Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Ya ayyuhar rasulu balligh ma unzila ilayka min rabbik wa in lam taf'al fama ballagta risalatahu wallahu yasimuka minan nas. Surah 5, Maidah, and ayat number 67. This is the way it is in the Quran today, and this is the way we have it in the dua, therefore, because it is that way in the Quran, right? Now, there's a lot of controversy about where this particular ayat was revealed to the Prophet. Lots have been written. Sunni historians have written, and Shia historians have written as well. But all of them, whether they say it was in Arafat or whether it was in Ghadir-e-Qum outside Makkah, I think all of them are agreed that this ayat was revealed at the time of the final or farewell pilgrimage of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. He went... After conquering Makkah, the Prophet did not stay there. He returned to Medina because he had made Medina his home, even though his birthplace was Makkah. So he, towards the end of his life, because as a prophet, he knew exactly when he was going to leave the physical world, he announced that he was going on his farewell pilgrimage. And therefore, thousands of Muslims accompanied him on this final pilgrimage. So he did his final pilgrimage, and then he was returning to Medina, and at this place, Ghadir-e-Qum. Yes, Ghadir is a pond, and Qum is the name of the place where this pond is. It's called Ghadir-e-Qum, the pond of Qum. This is where people would have stopped to water their animals and etc., right? Because the desert is a very hot place. And the Shia version is that this ayat was revealed to him at this place. So what did the Prophet do? He stopped the caravan. Some people had gone ahead. He called them back. They waited for others to catch up. The Prophet asked that a stage should be constructed from the saddles of the camels, etc., so that a little higher place could be created, a stage. And it was in response to this ayat that the Prophet got up on that stage, called Hazrat Ali up on the stage, and he made this final declaration. Look, I emphasize the word final declaration. So what am I saying? This is not the first time or the last time. This is the last time. But this is not the first time that the Prophet is saying that Maulana Ali is his successor. I asked you to read my paper on Hazrat Ali. And if you have started, you will have realized that at the age of, some historians say 10, 11, others say 13, Maulana Ali was already declared the Prophet's wasi, wali, waris, brother, etc. The Prophet already, at the beginning of his mission, had declared who his helper, who his successor, who his asas, wali, wasi, deputy, would be. But Ghadir-e-Qum is the final and a very public, thousands of people declaration. So remember that, okay? Now, in my career as Al-Waiza, going from Jamaat Khana to Jamaat Khana, one thing which I noted was that quite a number of young people who knew the English translation of their dua, would come to me and say, Eliza, we don't understand this ayah, because it's saying, O messenger, convey that which has been revealed to you from your Lord. If you did not do so, then you did not convey his message. And Allah will protect you from people, from humankind. There's something missing. Anybody who reads this completely impartially, because this wahi is at the end of the Prophet's life. He has been passing the message, transmitting the message for 22 years and some months. So what is this ayah trying to say? It's bound to, the English translation is bound to make you wonder that what is it that, you know, Allah is asking the Prophet to do? He has been delivering the message for 22 years. And what is it that if he doesn't deliver, then all those 22 years hard work will be of no value? So that, I think, is it shows that our young people are very analytical, they are logical, and they have questions, and we should all have questions. The Ismaili Tariqa encourages us to engage and to question. So for this now, we have to look at the composition of the Quran. You know, how is the Quran composed? And how was it all done? We are going to go into a very brief history now, okay? For those of you who have a copy of The True Meaning of Religion by P. Shahabuddin Shah, if you have a copy of that book, go to the very back. There are two footnotes that Professor Ivanov, the Russian scholar who did the translation of this book into English, he has given two footnotes. Read footnote number two. Yeah, it's here in front of me. And in it, he now this is Ivanov, a Russian, not a Muslim, not an Ismaili. He says, as is well known, the question of the origin of the version of the Quran as it is at present is a difficult matter, full of rather doubtful points. See? So this is well known in the world of scholarship. It may not be known to the, you know, the run of the ummah, if you like, because they are not really interested in the academic side. But the world of scholarship about Islam knows that the present version of the Quran has a very, very checkered history. I'm going to summarize that very briefly. When the Prophet used to receive wahi, he used to reveal it. He used to say it. He used to articulate it, okay? We are talking about 1400 years ago. So paper had not been invented in the world at that time, okay? There was no paper. So how were they writing it? They were writing it on dried animal skins, on bones, anything they could inscribe on. Papyrus, yeah, they would inscribe on it, right? And the people who did it had a special name. They were called the scribes of the revelation. Katibane wahi, the scribes of revelation. Okay, so now you understand that things were scattered. And we Shias, we know that Maulana Ali was also a scribe. He used to write down everything that the Prophet, and if you have started reading the article on Maulana Ali, you will know that there's a wonderful passage there from Najul Balagha of Maulana Ali, that he said that he used to be present whenever wahi came to the Prophet, in Makkah or in Medina, on the plain, in the mountain, day, night, wherever, on the battlefield, wherever. Maulana Ali was always present. Okay? And he used to write it down. when the Holy Prophet passed away, and in the time of the caliphs, the first three caliphs of Sunni Islam, that is Abu Bakr, Umar, and Usman, Islam spread east and west, right? Islam spread east and west. That happened, so now more and more people of other than Arabic language are coming into Islam. That's one point. The second point is there were several battles in order to do that. And those, they say that in one battle, 70 Hafiz of Quran, you know, they used to, the Arabs had an oral history. They had wonderful memories. They could memorize anything. And the Quran is very easy to memorize because of its poetic nature. And there were 70 who knew the Quran by heart. 70 of them were martyred in that battle. Okay, you can see how the picture is building up now. And so what happened is that Abu Bakr appoints a 22-year-old secretary called Zayd ibn Haris. And these are mentioned in this footnote, yeah? And he says to him that he should combine and make a copy of the Quran, a uniform copy of the Quran. So that's one thing. Maulana Ali had offered his version. They rejected it, right? Because they had become the worldly caliphs. So for them, they didn't want to listen to Maulana Ali. Okay. And then what happens? They say, this footnote tells you that in the time of Umar, he was not interested, right? He did his own thing. But in the time of Usman, this is really mind-blowing. What did he do? He, with the pressure of his governors, he realized that there were still copies, individual copies which people had. So he had them all brought in, and, are you ready for it? He had them burned. And therefore, if you look at Shia Ishnashi literature, this is one point on which they are very angry. They say, you know, was the Holy Quran a piece of newspaper that he could burn it? How dare he burn it, right? And therefore, you see how this tension always continues between the 12 Shias and the Sunnis. Whereas Ismailis always say, our Imam has the Quran, so we don't bother, right? We don't participate in this tension, right? Now, of course, then there are lots of things happening over this, right? So one of the things which is very commonly known is that nobody has been able to add anything to the Holy Quran. You know, in the world, in the history of religion, people, scholars do say that the previous scriptures, like the Old and the New Testament, etc., they have had additions made to them, right? But this is not the case with the Quran. Nobody has been able to add to the Quran because it has a very unique style and language, okay? And the proof of that is from the Quran itself. I'm going to give you four ayats. We take them down. We won't be able to look at all of them. So we'll only look at one. This is Surah 17:17 and ayat number 88. And we will look at that in a minute. But just take down these other three, okay? Surah 11, ayat number 13. Surah number 10. Ayah 37 to 38. And last one, Surah number 2, number 2, and Ayah number 23. So now let's just have a quick look at 1788, okay? Those of you who have your Quran in front of you, look at it. It's very interesting. Surah 17, which is Bani Israel, ayat number 88. It says, say, kul. So obviously it's a command to the Holy Prophet, right? So it is the Prophet who will articulate these, enunciate these words. Verily, though humankind and the jinn, not only humankind on its own. Humankind and the jinn should assemble, gather together to produce the like of this Quran. They could not produce the like thereof, though they were helpers one of another. So, this ayat is your proof that nobody could add things to the Quran. It's an open challenge to humankind and to jinn, both of you together, help each other and produce a copy like this. You will not be able to do it, okay? And these other three ayahs which I have given you, which you will look at in your own leisure time, that in the next one, 11, 13, God is challenging them through the prophet. Okay, so you don't believe, you think this is a forged book? Go and bring me 10 surahs like this. They couldn't. Then in surah 10, ayah 37, 38, the prophet challenged them to produce one surah. They couldn't. And this surah 2, ayah 23 is also the same. He challenged them to produce one surah like this, but they couldn't. So this is why Muslims, chati tokine, with full confidence, they say nobody has been able to add to the Quran. But the crucial question is, have they been able to subtract, take away from the Quran? And the answer is yes. Yes, this is also well known, that there are things missing from the Quran. And you all will have heard of Maulana Sultan Shah's Farman about the 10 paras which are missing, and they are with us, the Imam had said. Right? And I think our inclination would be to think that they are physically 10 paras. But I think what the Imam would have meant is that all of the Quran in Batin is with me, right? Whether people have taken things out of it or not. So, this coming back to now, this ayat, Surah 5, ayat 67. I started by explaining that there's something strange about this ayat. And in my paper on Hazrat Ali, I have really gone into detail about this, is that a Sunni commentator, Sunni scholar, very famous, his name is Jalaluddin al-Suyuti. So from his name, al-Suyuti, he is from Egypt, right? There is a place called Asyut. He is from there. So Jalaluddin al-Suyuti, who was there in the 15th century, okay, of the Christian era, 15th century. He has written a very full commentary called Tafsir-e-Durri Mansur. And if you go into his, by the way, very interesting, this has now been translated into Urdu. We know that, right? So it's in the Urdu language as well. But his is originally, of course, in Arabic. And he says, he, Sunni. Now, first, let me tell you about him. He's a Sunni scholar. He's also written a book about the Khulafa, the Khilafats in Islam, history book, about all the different dynasties in Islamic history. He has actually left the Fatimids out completely. He hasn't given one sentence on the Fatimids. So from that you can see that he's not a friend. He's in no way inclined towards Shia Islam. He is not a friend of the Shias, okay? But in his Tafsir-e-Dur-e-Mansur, the commentary on the Quran, he says that in the time of the Prophet, this ayat was recited like this. O Messenger, convey the command that has been revealed to you that Ali is the Mawla of the Mu'mins. Yeah? I'll just say to you in Arabic. Ya ayyuha rasulu balig ma unzila ilayka min rabbika inna aliyan mawla al-mu'minin wa in lam tafal fama balagta risalatahu wallahu yasimuka minan nas. It's a very strict command from God. Do it. Do it. Otherwise, this whole message will go to waste. And God says to the prophet, I know people are against it, but I will protect you from them. Yes? This is all part of our history, yeah? That this whole phrase is missing. Yeah? So to study the Quran is a very demanding exercise, I can tell you that. And we need to look at all these other things which are also, you know, available, like this Jalaluddin Suyuti. And he actually says that in the time of the Prophet, this ayat was recited like this. Anna Ali and Mawla al-Mu'minin, that Ali is the master of the believers. And I hope that you have all looked at the word Mawla, yes? And did any of you also follow up what I said about in the article? That this is linked to Surah 33, Ayat 6. So if you look at that Surah 33, Ayat 6 now, which is very important, I would like to. Really, Jamaat has never heard these things before, unfortunately, in wazis or anywhere, right? We keep hearing the same, very boring and very inaccurate account of the Dirakum, yeah? Surah 33, Ayat 6. Translations are quite dodgy. They are quite inadequate. My translation says, the Prophet is closer to the believers than an-nabiyu awla bil-mu'minina min anfusihim. English translations are all dodgy. What it really means is the prophet, an-nabi, awla, has a greater right over the souls of the mu'minin than they themselves. And, you know, I think those of you who have read Maulana Sultan Shah's farmans, you know, he used to say openly, tamara tamara ru ane tamari akal nu jad mara ma che. Yeah? I am the source of your souls and your akal. So if you are a mu'min, your soul belongs to your maula. The word aula is the root of the word maula. Master, greater right, like a master has a greater right over his slave than the slave himself. And here is this whole relationship between Mawla and the Banda. We've already discussed about Bandagi. Bandagi is Banda. Abd, Ibadat, means to do gulami, right? Okay? So you all heard this complete exposition from this Surah 33. And this is a very strong point about the Ismaili scholarship, that we always find Quranic references for whatever hadith we hold important. Because hadith, there have been definitely many hadith which have been forged. Okay? So for us, any hadith?
Advisor Saiba?
Yes.
Just on that point.
Yes.
If I may, sorry to interrupt.
No problem.
The Urdu translation makes more justice.
Okay.
When it says Paigambar momno par unki jano se bhi zyada haq rakhte hain.
Yes. Very
rather,
good.
Rather than closer.
Yes, exactly.
I looked at Marmaduke's translation and Yusuf Ali's translation.
Yes.
They both say closer. Closer, yes, or ziyada are two different things.
Two different things altogether. Altogether. So that's why we need, you know, the meaning of the word aula. Greater right. So did you see that Musa Bhai has also given us a very good reference from an Urdu translation, which is far more accurate. Okay, let's leave this ayat now, that at the time of Ghadir-e Khum, there was a tremendous amount of jealousy for Hazrat Ali, because Hazrat Ali had just come back from a very, very successful trip to Yemen, you know. Prior to Hazrat Ali, another person had been sent there, Khalid bin Walid. He had had no success. When Maulana Ali went there, everybody turned to him, and he brought a lot of gains with him, which he was very strict about the distribution of. And so people resented that. There was a lot of jealousy and anger against Maulana Ali. And this last sentence, Allah will protect you from the people. This is because there was a slight hesitation on the part of the Prophet. He didn't want people to revolt and, you know, against Hazrat Ali. But Allah assured him and said, you do it. If you don't do it, it is as though you have not delivered the message. Meaning, without the meaning, without the ta'wil which Maulana Ali was going to give, the batin, the esoteric meaning, the Quran would remain only a zahiri kitab. Yes, it would remain only a zahiri fixed kitab. It would not have the meaning which should be dynamic and should change according to time and place. So this ayat, with all that history, is what we start our third part of the dua. And then after that, we have a lot of wonderful names of Allah. La ilaha illallahul hayyul qayyum. Right? There is no God except Allah, and He is ever living and everlasting. This al-hayyul qayyum, as you know, is from the first line of the Ayatul Kursi. Those of you who are not familiar with Ayatul Kursi, go to Surah 2, Ayat 255. Allahu la ilaha illahu al-hayyul qayyum. Yes? Hayy. Living. And not just living. Qayyum. Ever living. Everlasting. And this is the reality of Imamat. That the Imam is always living amongst us. And when one Imam departs physically, there is always another Imam to take his place by Nas, right? So this is about our understanding of these very important names of Allah. You know, all Muslims believe that the Ayatul Kursi is the most important ayat in the Quran. And the reason for that, because it starts with these two. They call them, the Muslims call them the supreme names, Ism-e-Azam, the name Al-Hayy and Al-Qayyum. But we Ismailis have a different meaning for Ism-e-Azam. For us, Ism-e-Azam is what the living Ism-e-Azam of God gives to His murids. Did you make a note of that? For Ismailis, our Ism-e-Azam is the ism that the living Ism-e-Azam of God, because the Imam is the supreme name, living and everlasting, of God on earth. And then La ilaha illallah, Malikul Haqqul Yaqeen. Malik, King, Haqq, True, Yaqeen, Certainty. All these are beautiful, beautiful names, right? And the same with Malikul Haqqul Mubeen. Only one word is different there. Mubeen, manifest. You see, Zahir. He has to be Zahir. He can't be hidden. Okay. And then the last one, which the Jamaat finds very difficult for pronunciation. La ilaha illahu Maliku. Maliku. Everybody pronounces Maliki because they have seen Malik in other parts. Maliki Yawm Middin in the first part. So here also they go Maliki. It's not Maliki here, it's Maliku Yawmiddin. The Malik, the master of the day of, the Lord of the day of judgment. All very beautiful names of Allah. And we have discussed in great detail in our very first session that for us, these are living. They are living names. They are not only living, they speak, they have akal, perfect intellect, and they are very, very honored, right? Okay. Now, then we come to something really interesting. La fata illa alila sayfa illa zulfakar. La fata illa aliyun la sayfa illa zulfakar. And young people in the Jamaat have said, suddenly, Alwaisa, why is there mention of a sword? Zulfikar is a sword, right? It's a weapon of war. Why do we recite that in the third part of our dua? Have you ever thought about that? I'm sure you have. Yes. We should not look at just a sword. We should look at the whole of this, what is a hadith-e Qudsi. It's a hadith-e Qudsi. This is not something that the Prophet said himself. This is divine. These are divine words which the Prophet then pronounced. And he did it at the Battle of Uhud. So again, I think I will refer you to my paper. And I have written this paper with all these questions in my mind. That Uhud was a second battle which the Prophet had to fight in defense, because his enemies from Makkah had come with a greater number of people and horses and camels to attack him, because they were smarting from the defeat in the first battle of Badr. Yeah, all these battles are described in that paper. Please go and read it yourself. But in Uhud, there was a calamity because a group of archers, bow and arrows, a group of archers whom the Prophet had positioned on a hill, they disobeyed the Prophet's command not to move from there until he called them. They saw that the battle was being won and they were greedy for the spoils of the war, so they disobeyed the Prophet. They came running down from their position and the enemy rallied and attacked again. And in this attack, even the Prophet, they said that he lost two. And all the other Sahabas, when they saw the danger, they ran away. Only Maulana Ali stood by the Prophet. And they say that Maulana Ali had so many cuts in this war that at the end of the war, which was neither won or lost, you know, it had not a very determined outcome, the Prophet asked the women to nurse Maulana Ali. And the women said to the Prophet, where do we begin? He has so many cuts. So that shows Maulana Ali's bravery, that he didn't care about himself. He cared about the Prophet and the religion of Islam. And it's at this point that the Prophet said, the angels in heaven are reciting, La fata illa aliyun, la sayfa illa zulfikar. There can be nobody. Now, unfortunately, in our dua, here is another word, fata, in Arabic. If you open a dictionary, you will find about 10 different meanings. And in our dua, they have chosen the word hero. There is no hero except Ali. But the word fata has a deeper meaning than that. The word fata comes futuwa. Fata means somebody who has reached the perfection of all their qualities, physical, spiritual, mental, intellectual, all their capacities are absolutely perfect. So therefore, Sufis would use the word insan-e-kamil, and Ismailis, we use the word insan-e-mutlak, the complete man. So Maulana Ali is that complete man. And every imam after him is that complete man. Insan-e-mutlak, M-U-T-L-A-Q. But we can use the word insan-e-kamil because we do use Sufi terminology as well. So Maulana Ali is that. And his sword, therefore, I know that in our Ginan, particularly I think Akshaji, it is always recited on the birthday of Maulana Ali, that Dulbul and Zulfikar descended from the heaven. Am I correct? Whoever has Ginanic knowledge, yeah, this is fine. Ginans are allowed to do that. There is poetic license as well. But what we have to understand is that the horse and the sword were not heavenly or miraculous. The imam was miraculous. And in his hand, any sword would have done the same work. Okay? All right. Time is going on, so I'm going to go on to the next bit, which is Tawassalu indal masaibi. Bi Mawla. Kumul. Not Kumil, that's a printing mistake. It should have been corrected long time ago. Kumul Hadirul Mawjud Shah Karim Mil Husseini. There are two things which we do wrong here. The pronunciation of the word Kumul becomes Kumil. And I hope you notice Tawassalu indal masaibi Bi Mawla. The word Mawla is already there. So we don't need to say Mawlana Shah Karim. And it isn't there. But people say it twice because they don't know the Arabic language, right? So it should be Tawassalu indal masaibi Bi Mawla Kumul Hadirul Mawjud Shah Karim Mil Husseini Allahumma Laka Sujudi Wa Taati. And here, the key word is tawassalu. When Anis did that very good summary, she mentioned the word wasila twice. This tawassalu is from the word wasila. Seek at the time of difficulties the help of your Lord. This is Mawla Ali and his progeny, the Imams, the holy and pure Imams, right? So they are the wasila. If you want help, you will from Allah, you have to go through the imam. If you want forgiveness from Allah, you have to go through the imam. If you want to give zakat, the son to God, you have to give it to the prophet. This is in the Quran, in every single ayat. And this is why I gave you that example of even in the allegorical verses, hold fast to Allah. And then one ayat later, hold fast to the rope of Allah. This is wasila, intermediary between the divine and the human. This is the imam of the time. And because he is a bridge between the divine and the human or humanity, then the imam has the human body, but the divine attribute. It's as simple as that, but people have difficulty understanding that, right? So this then, I have today tried to explain to you the third part of our dua, very historical, very, very interesting as well, because it requires a lot of background knowledge to understand its beauty and its importance. And now we can have questions there, Rosmin.